There are those who believe that podcasts here began out there, far across the universe, with tribes of neckbeard film fans who may have been the forefathers of the Movie Review Podcast. Some believe that there may yet be brothers of man who even now podcast to survive somewhere beyond Apocalypse Video.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
ABC's Sunday Night Movie presents the most spectacular space adventure ever filmed. Transport yourself in time to a star system far beyond our own galaxy.
Core systems transferring control to probe craft. Launch when ready.
Battlestar Galactica, a saga of a star world.
I got him on the left. I got him on the right.
Precision flying.
For 1,000 years, a race of alien machines has been bent on destruction of the human race.
They hate us with every fiber of their existence.
And now their evil plans may become reality.
It's dangerous around here.
Why does people want to hurt us? What do we do to them?
It's not what we did to them. It's what they fear we could do.
Join the last remnants of the human race in their quest for a new world.
14th colony. This other world. Where is it? What is it called?
Earth.
And be there for the ultimate confrontation.
Enemy closing, 30 microns.
But if you're wrong...
25 microns.
I'm not wrong.
15 microns.
Cylons lured me into their deception once.
Closing in, 5 microns.
Never again.
Battlestar Galactica.
Welcome, fellow Battlestars, to another
Oh, this is the first install.
Welcome back to the first installment.
Well, I can't change it now. It's on the record. Welcome to the first install. I don't know why I'm doing this voice. For some reason, I'm your host, Dave, joined by my fellow Cylon, Nick.
By your Imperial Command.
For some reason, the original Battlestar Galactica just makes me want to do this voice. We're talking about Battlestar Galactica, the original series, the pilot, Saga
like
of
that,
Star World.
That's what Boxy's going to sound like when he grows up.
It's funny you mentioned Boxy, Nick. So let's just get right into it. As I was looking at the ChadDB for this... You will never believe who Boxy, the little kid who keeps running away and getting into danger in this pilot episode, becomes. Do you know?
I feel like I did know once upon a time.
That character of Boxy is played by Noah Hathaway, who would go on to play Atreyu!
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did know that once upon a time.
That blew my mind. It's funny, too. On the ChatDB, the picture that they use is literally him holding like his horse. I can't remember the name of his horse.
Oh, Artax.
Artax, yes. Oh, yeah, of course. When Artax is in the one of the most traumatizing things a young child could see is Artax in like the tar pit or whatever.
Probably when kids' movies were dark.
And you know what? That yeah, I think this era, 1978, Battlestar Galactica, gets dark at times, especially with this pilot. Like, there are some things in this pilot that I was not expecting. Because so before we get into the show, let's kind of tackle our backstory with Battlestar Galactica. How familiar were you with the original and just sort of the series in general going in?
Well, I think that's a good starting point, especially because I think you and I are basically almost literally opposite sides of the coin here. I've seen this original series from 78 once before, and it was, I first started watching it around the time I think you and I first started talking. And so it was around that time period, like, and probably didn't sync up perfectly, but around that time period when I was really, it's been a while. It's been a while. Around the time I was really diving into like pop culture stuff, I think I would describe it as. And this is
a big known quantity.
Well, I feel like it is because of the remake. I think this original one has kind of been relegated to B tier, maybe, I guess. Like everybody,
cheesy sci-fi.
Yeah, I think this one actually is more forgotten than anything, because the new one, which I have not seen, exactly. And I think that resides a lot more prominently in terms of the property, in the mind of the general public. But I've seen this one, and it's been some time, like I said, but I really liked it. I got a real kick out of it. Like, this is like you and I have watched some Star Trek together, mostly just the movies, but I feel like I've got a good exposure to that. And this one is like walks that ground between Star Trek and Star Wars to me. And I think it's this really cool middle ground where it's like, yes, it does have the exploratory side on it, but it also has like the Cylons, which are like some of my favorite villains. Like, they just look
pretty cool.
They're like proto, like if I was a kid and I didn't know what a sci-fi villain looked like, this is what I would draw. Like, it's like, that's kind of like how strong.
And they talk like this.
Yeah, and they talk like this.
3, Vectors 1-7 up to 8. Bomb and attack from left hill.
And they've got this. Well, I mean, I'm sure most people know what. Well, do Cylons look like this in the original and the new one?
No, they are. Well, I mean, the general, they're like silver robotic things with like the little red eyes. But like,
Do they have the mohawk?
I don't remember. They modern them up a little bit, but they make them look kind of more sinister. And they don't look as much like, I'm trying to remember if CG is involved at all, but they look less like clearly a guy in like a awkward suit.
And that's the thing about like this, I think like Battlestar Galactica walks that line where like the Cylons, they are goofy looking, but at the same time, it has that kind of like Power Rangers effect, like the, Kaiju effect. Like, it's guys in suits, but it has this level of like believability to it that is really charming.
They put like a surprising level of menace behind them in terms of the way they're shot. They're always in darkness. Like, their ships are dark and probably illuminated mostly by the flashing left and right red light that goes on in their little visor thing. And the way they talk is fun, but it's sinister in like a fun, okay for kids way. Like you said, yeah. I think Power Rangers is a good analogy or a good example.
Yeah, and there's stuff about them that is goofy. Like, like you said, it's like a guy kind of clunkily walking in a suit. And I mean, they are supposed to.
Your plan did not go as well as we had hoped.
The warriors continue to advance at least 6 squadrons.
Recall all raiders to defend base ship.
Our raiders are all destroyed.
All destroyed. How? We took them by surprise.
Apparently, it was not as big a surprise as we had hoped for.
Yeah, there's and that is another. There's a bunch of things here that I think are working in its favor for me. But yeah, especially like, you know, I'm always into the villains and the bad guys in most things, and I think here, especially like, well, we haven't talked about everything, I guess, basically, but there's just a lot of stuff here that really like perks. Gets my interest going in terms of like just the vibes of it. So I've seen the original once before. It's been a long time, so it's for me it's about seeing if it still holds up and how well things how well I still like it basically. So that's kind of my background with this one, and I have not seen the new one.
Yeah, like you said, I'm coming at it from the other end. I've seen the original the remake. I watched it with Chad years ago when he was still a human. Before he turned into a full Cylon, and we both really enjoyed it. I'm trying to remember. I want to say that show is like 4 or 5 seasons or something, so it wasn't super long. And I feel like that show, I was surprised, like watching this, the pilot movie, like the plot is remarkably similar. I would say it's almost not identical, but like the general theme, the general idea of the Cylons like breaking some sort of treaty or like sabotaging, you know, the humans, and then like basically like killing everyone, and then all of humanity as we know it is on this one ship essentially, or this like, you know, convoy of ships.
You know, it's a cool way to start the story. I don't know how close they'll follow each other throughout the series. Well, obviously the series that you watched went on for 4 seasons. This one only had 1. But I think it's a great like intro. It's like, oh, why is humanity like on this exodus?
It's pretty heavy. Like I assumed going into this that it would not be similar. Like, cause I remember thinking like, wow, that is a, like watching the reboot show. Like that is a hell of an intro. Like stakes are high from the get go. It built up the Cylons to be very menacing. And, I was like, I didn't think that the pilot would match that intensity at all, let alone I didn't think it would match the story, let alone the intensity. And it kind of does in its 70s cheesy way, I think. Like, there are times when the show gets surprisingly brutal. Like, in the beginning, when they realize, like, when, you know, I guess let's get into the plot of the show. So, of the pilot. Saga of a Star World. So basically, it's established that humans. Oh, and we should say right off the bat that this is clearly a response to Star Wars. I mean, you can't shake that. When the title credits start, you're like, oh yes, it's like a mix between Star Wars and Superman the movie. Like, you know, space credits are coming at you. You know, but I was surprised at how effective that was. Like, it looked good. Like, it should be said right off the bat that I can't speak for the rest of the show past the pilot, but this TV movie pilot looks good. Like, am I the only one that thought it looked genuinely, like, as far as 1978 goes, like, I thought this looked shockingly good.
I think you're right, and we've talked about this a little bit, and I think, you know, this pilot movie miniseries thing was designed as such, and I think so. I honestly don't remember. I think there's some stuff I do remember being like goofy. But as far as the quality of like, say, the miniatures and the introductions and stuff like that, like, I do think that there was some real intent here to really make it something really cool and memorable and a really unique synthesis of what was already coming before that, like Star Wars, like you said. And I think that the quality here is, I agree with you. I think it looks really cool. Like, this is, I could see seeing this in the theater. Especially those intro credits. Like, they did some work on that, and it looks cool. And you said it too when we were watching it. Like, even the music is pretty good.
The music sucked me in big time. Yeah.
Yeah,
like,
and
it
so
has
I,
grandeur to it. You know, it's not like a cheap like Casio. You know, it's like a full on orchestral score.
Yeah, it's real good, and it gets you in the mood. It has that kind of I don't know, that triumphant space science exploratory theme going on. And yeah, I think that the other thing that really stands out that, you know, we don't see ever anymore is the kind of the miniature practical effects. going on that is really, like, I think some of that ship work is on par with, like, Star Wars.
Well, apparently they got the guy, John Dykstra, the guy who did the effects for Star Wars.
And that, and it shows, I think, like, you know, I love the ships in this show. I think they're all very cool. Like, they're different enough from everything else. I think that, like, they just look, these are cool ass spaceships.
It's funny looking at the Chad DB trivia. Apparently George Lucas and 20th Century Fox sued the producers of the show because they thought there were too many similarities between Star Wars. And I guess it got reworked. The case got thrown out, but then Fox appealed and it continued until 83 until it was settled out of court. But, I mean, I don't know. Like, I personally feel like this is different enough from Star. I mean, that's like Lucas saying, hey, you're doing another sci-fi show that's kind of adventure-y and fun.
I mean, which one that's is Star really... I guess
no,
like
sci-fi could be fun. Only Star Wars.
So they were literally suing for the ship design or just everything.
It doesn't specify. It just says alleged similarities. It doesn't specify with what.
Star Wars is the only sci-fi we're allowed to have.
Well, hold on. You're making a sci-fi show and it's fun and not slow and boring. That's Star Wars. You're trying to sneak it past us. I don't know, George. Like, I mean, the ship designs don't look similar, and I would say it's more just kind of a fun vibe that they're trying to duplicate with this from Star Wars. Like,
the vibe, the genre is certainly
like
the same or
fantasy
close.
Type. Like you said, like I think you summed it up perfectly. This is a great middle ground between Star Wars and Star Trek. Like you get the sci-fi jargon of Star Trek in there, like, oh, how many qubits do you have? Like, oh, we're 3,700 microns away. You know, like they kind of like walk that line between the sci-fi jargon and the more fun space stuff from Star Wars. Like, for instance, I think one of the funnest things of this episode, this pilot TV movie episode thing, is whenever a ship whenever one of the Vipers launches out of the docking bay, and you just feel that intensity and that speed in a way that you don't get with Star Trek, but you felt with Star Wars. With Star Wars, it felt like you were on a ride.
Yeah, definitely. There is some moments where they really put you in the seat of the pilot kind of thing where you really feel like I thought it was so cool in this pilot episode where there was a sequence of shots where all the pilots' heads were like kind of launching, lurching back a little bit to show you that they're launching. And I just thought that was cool. Like there's little details like that.
I would argue like those moments when like the ships are launching out, like I felt like a Top Gun Maverick vibe almost where, you know, they're like launching out and then the force like pushes them back. You know what I mean? Like that was kind of the sense I was getting. I'm like, this is cool. And especially with the dogfight scenes, the space dogfight scenes when they're, you know, the Cylon ships are coming and they're attacking the ships and just the angles and the speed of everything is what got me. Like you felt like you were in it.
Yeah, I think these dogfight scenes in space are a lot more fast paced.
Yes.
The effects are feel more rapid. And I think that, and the other thing too is, at least in this episode, there's a lot of like, there's a lot of explosions, I guess, is what.
there's a lot of pew, pew, pew.
Yeah, a lot of pew. Like, even the lasers explode, like, in the air or in space.
Even when the lasers shoot, they don't hit their target, they still somehow explode in space. Which is awesome.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the kind of thing that is like goofy, but pretty cool.
Well, again, like you talk about riding the line between Star Wars and Star Trek. This also rides the line between goofy and serious. Like, because I mentioned before, like to get back into the plot synopsis, like the human race, it suggests that you know, the pyramids were built by, you know, ancient humans or something. And these humans went out into space and went far and far away. And it's like, you know, like what happened to those people? It's basically suggesting that the people in this humankind in this series were basically the ones that were responsible for, like, you know, a lot of the myths on Earth. You know what I mean? Like, it kind of sets that up and for the eventual spoiler conclusion where you find out that, oh, Earth exists. It's like, you know, the 13th colony, and it's way out in the far reaches of space. And maybe we came from there at some point and we left or whatever. Now we got to go back. But it's a cool thing that it sets up, and it's something that kind of gives, I don't know, I don't want to say a leg up on Star Trek or Star Wars, but I think it certainly separates it. Like, for instance, the helmets that all of the fighter pilots wear look like Egyptian, what you call it?
Well, I was thinking like a sphinx.
Yes, they look like sphinx helmets. They're like gold, and they have like the black stripes and stuff. So it's an interesting thing that it sets up right from the get-go. So kind of keep that in the back of your mind. Anyway, so I'm doing a terrible job at Nick explaining this. I'm going to pass it to you.
Okay, so the movie opens, and it's like it's going to be a peace conference kind of thing.
Yeah.
Between the humans and the Cylons. And the Cylons are explained that they're a machine race that were built by, if I remember correctly, lizard people.
Reptilians,
that's right. And the machines became too smart. They wiped out the reptilians, but we still call them Cylons. And they're kind of like a war race or whatever. But there's going to be quote unquote peace between the humans and the Cylons.
Finally done it. Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, because this guy looks a lot like Joe Biden. Like,
yeah, we got Biden, and we got Grima Wormtongue, AKA Baltar. Which Baltar, I love Baltar's name, and I love, actually, you know, I just love Baltar. Like, he is the skeeviest guy around, and Baltar is this member of this council, the humans, and he's kind of misleading the president. And
send warships out, it'll look bad for the peace conference.
This is about peace.
I don't know what's been happening.
Our patrol ran into trouble. We picked up some signals, but they're being jammed. Could be smugglers or pirates or... Standing
by. Get me the president, please. Mr. President, our patrol is under attack. We don't know by whom. As a precautionary measure, I would like to launch intercept fighters.
Why should you think that's highly inadvisable in view of the delicacy of our situation?
You're quite right, Baltar. Commander, as a precautionary measure, I insist upon restraint. If this turns out to be an encounter with some outlaw traffic, we could jeopardize the whole cause of peace by displaying fighters when we are so close to our rendezvous.
Mr. President, two of my starfighters are under armed attack.
By forces unknown. You are not to launch until the situation is more clear.
Sir, may I at least urge you to bring the fleet to a state of alert?
I will consider that. Thank you, Commander.
So Baltar has manipulated, the president into basically getting this peace conference between humans and Cylons. The humans have gathered like all of their colonies, like, battle stars. So every colony, I guess, I'm led to believe has like a battle star. Big warship. And they're all together. And it turns out this is going to be an ambush by the Cylons. So Baltar is working for the Cylons, and they're here. And there's only one captain of the Battlestar, and that's Battlestar Galactica, and that's Captain Adama, or Commander Adama. And he kind of catches on because they stumble upon the Cylon fleet. And so there's a big battle, but the son and the two sons of Adama spot the Cylons, and they're racing back to tell them, you know, it's a trap. Yeah. It's a trap.
They're on it's a fun setup. They're on patrol, and like the younger son like begs the older brother, like, I want to go on patrol too, man. You know.
Well, that's something that I give a lot of credit to the story.
It's not like we're gonna get blown up.
Well, and yeah, spoilers, the younger brother dies. And I thought,
yeah,
I really appreciated that sacrifice narratively, I guess, to give weight
stakes.
Because, yeah, stakes to it does stakes. Excuse me. It does stakes at two levels, at a personal level for Adama and Apollo and Athena, because that's her brother, too. it gives the stakes to at a micro level. And then, as we see, the Cylons do ambush all of humanity and basically wipe out the human race, with the exception of a few survivors.
Well, that's
and
part of the plan. Like, let's get all their warships over here. That's what Baltar does. They get all their warships over here for the press conference while the Cylons are allowed to then basically just destroy all the colonies, like air bomb them.
Yeah, exactly. Total war. And then we get a shot on the ground of Adama's home planet, Caprica, and we see Cylons just running bombing runs on the planet. And it is pretty brutal, actually. So I think
Doug
like,
dies. Yeah,
yes, that is that's true. They do literally like kill a real dog. Yeah, and they show it. I mean, and so
well, they show it in a way that you could in a TV movie, like an explosion happens and you're like, okay, the dog was there.
Right, right. It's implied but it's death, like, but I mean, wow. But they do say that the dog died. So,
it's pretty shockingly brutal. Like, you know, you see, and it's a cool matte painting moment where you see, of all people, Jane Seymour, who is like this reporter, I guess, like reporting on the peace conference. And it's so funny at Capricorn, they have like this courtyard area and they have like this, they like in a garden, they have like peace written out in big letters. Like,
yeah, it's like a flower design, I think. Like, if you've ever been to Disneyland, yeah. Like yes. They have, when you first walk in, it's got, I think it says Disney or the Mickey Mouse head or whatever in flowers. It looks like that, but it says peace.
It's so funny because you know what's about to happen. And then the Cylon ship's coming down from the matte painting and they start blowing stuff up. Like real explosions too. Like it looks pretty good. Like it's the type of thing like where explosions are going off like right next to the actors and you're like, whoa, this looks surprisingly intense. And like, you know, there's a lot of cool shots in this TV movie episode where like you just see flames off in the distance and like big plumes of smoke and you're like, whoa, this 70s cheesy TV sci-fi movie took it up a notch. Like I think that's what I kept saying when we were watching it, like, all right, they just took like I was Emerald, they took it up a notch. Oh, they killed the dog, they really took it up a notch there.
Is that the same guy that says like bang, like the dog died and you're like bang?
Yeah, and a lot of people were getting banged to death. Well, that didn't sound right. They were I was about to say they were getting blown to death. No, help me out here.
Keep trying.
They were getting exploded to death.
Exploded. Yes, typically when you get exploded, you die. But to your point about explosions, there is a lot of work here. Like, there's even a cockpit scene that, like, explodes in fire.
Well, that's the thing. Typically, like, in space sci-fi movies, like, when someone blows up in a spaceship, like, the entire ship, you cut to the outside of the ship and the whole thing just blows up. But in this one, the Cylons are chasing the younger brother. And before you cut to that typical shot of the exterior of the ship blowing up, you're inside the cockpit as the pilot explodes. There's, like, an explosion within the cockpit. And then you cut outside and you see the ship blow up. You're like, whoa.
Yeah, you almost fell off your chair in that one.
I was shocked. I was blown away by that. Like I couldn't believe it, because you just don't see that. Like I said, the typical thing is you cut to the outside of the ship and the entire ship blows up, but with this you're inside the cockpit while an explosion happens specifically inside the cockpit, almost as if the pilot spontaneously combusts. way it looks.
Yeah, I really don't think Battlestar Galactica is concerned about like the physics or anything like that here. So,
well, as you said, they shoot lasers and the lasers just sort of explode in space when they don't hit their target.
Right. So it's almost like it feels like when the creators are like, you know what, let's just go ham with these explosions. Just yes. Do whatever we want. And I think it works. Like they'd really utilize them, like even inside. I forget which Battlestar, if it's the President's or whatever, but
they've
got explosions going on left and right. You got one guy like jumping across the screen.
When President Joe Biden's Galactica ship blows up, I think it's called the Atlantia. When that ship blows up. I was not expecting them to do like a people getting sucked out of the window moment, but they do it. And it's like terrifying because everyone's like, ah! You know, it's the thing you see like when something depressurizes and everyone's like flying around, but you see the president like his like flowing white robes like in the wind, you know, like ah, and then there's multiple explosions. I just You just don't expect that to happen with this frail old man. You know what I mean? You expect it to be like, oh, that's just a frail old man. They're not going to set explosions off around him. Nope. There are several explosions that go off around this frail old man as he's like flying through the air. But it's almost like I was kind of, I don't know about you, but I was kind of happy when this moment happened. I was like, yeah. Because the show sets up like this guy is very naive. You know, he's just like, oh, well, Baltar, what do you think? No, we should put the warships out.
It's almost literally Grima Wormtongue and Theoden in Lord of the Rings. I mean, Baltar is literally.
My sweaty cohort here tells me that I know we don't, you shouldn't do that. We shouldn't put the warships out.
Because there's at one point, Baltar leaves, and President, he doesn't see Baltar leave.
Baltar, where'd you go?
Mr. President.
Commander, one of our patrol ships is under attack from the main force approaching the fleet.
Mr. President, your welcoming committee is firing at our patrol.
Baltar. Baltar.
Yeah, and he's like, and then Adama asked the president something, and the president's just like looking around, like like muttering Baltar's name.
Baltar? Baltar? Like he doesn't know where he is. Like, yes. And the whole show, there's this great dynamic between because like the president talks with Odama, because Odama is part of the council, and he's like the only one in the council in the beginning. But when they're talking about this press thing or the peace thing, where he's just like, I don't know, dude, the Cylons hate us with every fiber of their being. Like our way of life does not match theirs. Like they do not care about freedom, you know, blah blah blah. And the president's like, no, it's all right, man. Baltar told me it was all good. It's shocking how much this guy looks like Biden. I was expecting him to put like the you know, the pilot glasses on, the sunglasses. Like, it's all right, man. But yeah, he immediately dies, and there's this great moment before the ships start blasting him away where he's like, what have I done? You know?
Right. It dawns on him that he's led humanity. And I think that's a nice little trick the movie does, I think, to just start us here at the, because we don't need to know how Baltar like manipulated the president or anything like that. Like, let's just start with tragedy kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, it sucks you in right away, like you said. Like, they go there when the little kid, like, spontaneously, or, you know, the younger brother of Apollo spontaneously combusts in a ship, and then his ship explodes unrelated. you know, they raise the stakes. The president's dead. It's literally the rest of humanity on this convoy of ships flooding through space. And again, like, I was not expecting that, because I figured, having only watched the reboot show, that was something that the reboot show must have done on its own. Like, it felt like such a modern, grim concept to start your sci-fi show with, that I just assumed that was specifically with the reboot. But that's how this original starts. And I was floored that they did that in 1978.
It's pretty cool. And yeah, so after the Cylons attack, the rest of humanity, which they say like fit on a total of 220 ships, I think.
Oh, there are that many ships?
Yeah, they say a number. Oh. It's like 200 ships. But oh, okay. I mean, but the thing is, and they do a couple of things that I think are clever, which, like, if you remember when they're checking for leaks, they say that's because they started using ships that like weren't designed for this travel.
They had to just get whatever they could when there's one thing, like when the fighters go out to fight the Cylons, when they realize they've been ambushed, one thing that happens during this fight is the Battlestar realizes what's happening. Like, they get the information that the colonies have been blown up, so they go to like, they basically go to like their headquarters, whatever, in Capricorn or Caprica. Is it Caprica? I keep wanting to say Capricorn. They go to Caprica, and the fighters are all confused initially. They're like, what, they're leaving us, you know. It's later found out that they find out why they went there, but the suggestion is they go to the planets and pick up whatever remaining survivors they can, right?
I'm sure that there's some coordination that we don't really see between getting all the last humans. Because Adama has that line where it's like, send this message out, to everywhere it will go to flee and meet us or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the movie taking the time to, and that is one thing that the movie doesn't really do to me a good job explaining, like, what kind of timeline we're working with, because I think you had said something that was like, oh, I didn't realize it was that quick, but I'm not really sure, like, how long, like, if this happened within hours or what.
Days,
but
weeks.
Well, yeah.
So they pick up survivors, and, like, again, to the things that I wasn't expecting this to do, like, when they go down to, like, Odama goes down with his son Apollo in, like, a starfighter, or a Viper, they call them, to pick up some personal effects. And there's, like, a crowd of people coming that look like they have pitchforks and torches. And it's like, oh, God, are they going to, like, kill them and steal their ship? So it gets that moment. Like, Apollo goes to his dad, like, Dad, the angry mob, they're coming this way. Maybe we should go.
Yeah, so there's, like, there's kind of three little arcs in this movie, this little pilot. So we have the escape. And then it opens up with them trying to, like, realize that, oh, we don't have any food, or the food has gone bad.
The first part is, like, the peace thing, and then we find out that we're sabotaged by the Cylons, and they blow up all the colonies. We got to pick everyone up. The second part is, hey, in our mad rush to get everybody and get on these ships and get the hell out of here, we realize that none of these ships are really equipped for long-range travel, and we don't have a lot of food or water. We're kind of starving to death here.
Yeah, so they're all it's about, what do we do after we're off the planet? We're running. Like, how do we survive? And so, yeah, there's this food factor. There's the equipment with the spaceships checking
these
for leaks and stuff like
that.
And then they're also, like, trying to figure out a way forward. And so Adama and Uriel, I think, he's a new council member, which is another thing that happens. Like, a new council of 12 has been
immediately
elected.
Formed again, like, to speak to that issue of time. Like, we have no idea. Like, did this just happen within an hour? Like, they never explain the passage of time. We don't know how much time is going by.
Because, I mean, really think about it. Like, let's say this all was really happening. Okay, this is space. These are multiple planets. And you're telling me that, and everybody important really did die. So these people were on the planets. And they have been assembled now they're all together. They're in a new council. Like, okay, so how long? I don't know how long it took. I'm assuming it took, like, at least days.
Yeah.
So there's one guy that.
Played by Ray Milland.
And he's like, I guess, I don't know, how would you call him? Like a bougie,
He's like Hedonism Bot from Futurama. When we first see him, like, so Apollo and his friend are, like, you know, looking. The name
for food,
what's it?
Starbuck.
Oh yeah, him and his friend. No, it was Boomer. Apollo
Boomer.
And Boomer are, like, going to ships to test for leaks, and then they're like, they find this food shortage issue. They're like, oh God, these people are starving, and this is, like, one of the few things where I'm like, okay, so if people are starving, it could have only been a few days, right? And I think someone says a few days.
Well, it's because that one woman says we haven't had water for 2 days, but that doesn't mean that. They never had water. They could have had water, and it ran out. So, but
again, it's not specific about the time. But anyway, it gets into this a shockingly grim moment where it's like, we're starving. And then they introduce this little bit here in this scene where, like, there's this woman that comes in, this blonde lady, and this other lady's like, get rid of her. She's a socialiter.
Does anyone here understand Geminese?
The woman said her husband is feverish.
What's wrong with your arm?
There are others in greater need than I.
Get her out of here. She should be jettisoned with the dead. No place for refuse here. Feed her to the Daggetts. Dirty socialator.
Yeah.
Meaning that she has, like, sex. Like, she's physical. She doesn't wait for their 7-year time limit to procreate, I guess. She just,
well, they
she'll
have,
do it.
Like you had said before, there's a lot of, like, Star Wars-esque, like, jargon and mythology made up. So apparently it seems like every planet or colony that existed was based on, like, an astrological sign, I guess. Because, this one is the Geminis. So whoever lived on this planet, I guess they were only allowed to have sex, like, once every 7 years or something.
Oh, it's specific to this group.
Yeah, and okay. So that's that she has her planetary biases, I guess.
Okay, okay.
And so she's condemned. And then they have this social aider, which is like a professional prostitute, I guess, it seems like. And she's kind of being like an outcast or like, you know, she's a witch. Get her.
Don't give her any food. She puts out.
Which, I mean, I can't, if I remember correctly, wasn't that the same kind of role that the character from Firefly played? Like she was some kind of like escort or something.
It's been a while since I've seen Firefly.
I was just wondering if there's some parallels there. But yeah, so she's different, or she's a social leader. So that's the term that they use. And they find her here, and that's how she gets it. Her name is Cassiopeia, and she
Starbuck
gets
is horny.
Well, yeah. So sorry. Oh man, that's one thing I didn't remember, like how much Starbuck kind of sucked. Like
I feel like this is appropriate. He's played like his character sucks. He's a douche, and he's played by someone named Dirk Benedict. Which I'm sorry, apologies to Dirk Benedict, but that sounds like a fake name. You know what I mean? I compare Dirk Benedict to Troy McClure. Like I feel like Dirk Benedict, like in my mind, he's like a Troy McClure type person or something.
Do you ever take that smoldering weed out of your mouth?
And I had this wonderful speech all prepared.
About this being your last night here. About possibly not seeing another night as beautiful as this one. Or another girl as beautiful as I am ever again.
Well, that speech is a little better than the one I had. Would you mind if I borrowed it on some future occasion?
Yeah, he sucks. I think I don't think I thought that back then, but in my opinion,
he's the worst part of the show.
Yeah, he's just he doesn't. So I guess he's probably like the Han Solo character, but
yeah, that's what he's supposed to be.
But he just has like the womanizing aspect. He doesn't have like an edge.
Well, yeah, anytime he's not like getting it on with the socialator, he's basically just whining the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like his main character trait is, I don't want to do work.
Yeah, he's the guy who's like really lazy, trying to get out of work. Like it's you know what? I said this, but I still think it's funny is that he's smoking in this Battlestar.
And when we first see him, yeah,
it's cracking me up. I don't know if they've ever done this in any other sci-fi, but like smoking like a cigarette or a cigar like in a space like that just cracks me up. Like this is like, you know, the oxygen is scarce.
Yeah, like a pressurized area.
Right, I mean, we're not allowed to smoke in like airplanes, and you think that's gonna be okay in a space? I just thought that was funny too.
It's like those long, thin cigars.
Yeah, exactly. So he's doing it's how we meet him. He's smoking, and then later, which we'll get to, but they go to like this gambling planet, and he's just trying to figure out how to like get out of working, and he's just like,
yeah.
"Oh, I'm gonna hire you to do this performance, and I'm gonna get out of here." And they take it like he's actually doing this.
Yes. I'm going to live here forever. I don't care about the service.
Yeah, it's not a joke. So yeah. I don't know. So yeah, he doesn't really get any redemptive things going on in this.
Like I imagine
pilot.
A lot of the episodes that are probably to come revolve around like if he's involved with the episode, it's probably him like getting into some sort of three-way love triangle with somebody, or they arrive on a planet and it's like a pleasure planet. He's like, "I don't want to leave." You know. It's
yeah, as I watched it this time, what really stood out to me was kind of like the shortchange they're giving the female characters because of Starbuck explicitly.
Yeah.
It's just kind of I don't know.
Well, yeah, he has the scene with Athena because he has the hots for Athena, and he's just like, this is after he walks into like the locker room after like, you know, the stuff has happened, and he's yelled at her because, and remember I said earlier where he's just like, they get the Battlestar gets the message that the Connies are being blown up in the middle of the battle, so they leave. And meanwhile, Starbuck, being the little wiener he is, like, "Where are they going?" And other people, they probably know something we don't. It's like, "No, they don't. They suck. They're leaving us. They left us. That's basically his character in that moment. But he comes to her in the locker room. He's like, hey, sorry I blew up at you earlier. Do you want to have sex? It's basically this scene. While she's standing there, like, topless, like, hiding behind, like, the locker door. She's, like, kind of awkwardly putting herself in the locker, you know, to cover herself. And the whole scene plays out like this. And I'm just like, this is bad.
Yeah, it's just awkward. It's not because it's not even, like, in that. And I'll say, like, if we're thinking of, like, contextually, like 78 or whatever, like, there is a level of, like, awareness I think they're exercising. Like, Starbuck has his back turned to her the whole time, but it's still, like, it doesn't play out very well. It's still totally awkward. Could you, like, can I get dressed, please?
I've been here this whole scene standing awkwardly behind this locker door.
Yeah, she's like, do you not see me? And Starbuck is basically the whole, he's just keeps saying, like, I said I'm sorry. Like, it's just kind of annoying. But
he's like, listen, I'm aroused now. This isn't gonna last forever. We got to do it now.
Right.
I don't know when I'm gonna be able to get aroused again.
And I don't remember how much this keeps going, but I don't know if you picked up on it, but this is like the scene. I think the purpose is to tell us that Athena and Starbuck have history. So Starbuck wants to, like, reconnect because, you know, they're going to die. So we got to
pay. The human race has ended. Better start procreating, eh?
Right.
Give me a minute. I don't, you know, time is so uncertain here. I don't know how much exactly time has passed. So, like, could you give me a minute, please?
Yeah, we don't know how much time has passed, but I mean, it literally, her brother did die, so.
My brother just died. I'm in here topless, hiding behind a locker door. Like, could you give me a minute, please? Whatever history we may or may not have, just give me a freaking minute. And then, of course, as soon as he goes down to the pleasure planet, well, we don't know it's a pleasure planet. They go down to this planet, like an old mining planet, and they discover that there's like basically like a casino underground or something. Look at all the qubits, and we can't lose. We keep winning. This is great. As soon as he meets up with the socialator, he's just like, ooh, okay.
Well, okay, you Athena skipped over a couple things. Yeah, exactly, because Athena, you know, basically quasi rejects him or whatever, but Starbuck and Cassiopeia get together on the ship before they get to the planet. Like, Starbuck wastes no time.
That's right. Like, they hook up in the launch bay.
Yeah, that's when he gets a steam burn.
Oh my god! Yes, Athena. Like, I forget what happens or why she starts. Maybe she's looking for Starbuck. I can't remember. They have like a meeting or whatever. So she starts looking through like the closed camera footage or whatever, and then she sees them making out, and she's like, "Ooh, how about a little steam bird?" And I guess there just happens. She just presses a button, and just steam just starts to come out like right where they are for some reason. Like, it's conceivable that like he has third degree burns.
That little snake.
They don't get into how bad it was, but if it's steam like that, like, I would assume like he got burned like pretty badly.
Yeah.
And he
so
would have been naked.
Right. And so Starbuck wasted no time. Like, he started hitting off Cassiopeia and just jumped ship from Athena immediately. And so him and Cassiopeia are kind of together. But before we get to the casino planet, it's important to mention that I think this is like the second arc. And that's Apollo, Starbuck, and Boomer clearing this minefield through this passageway in space.
It's
so that
the most
was
direct route. It's also the most dangerous. But if we just get in our little spaceships and clear out the mines, we can work our way through.
Right, and this is a dangerous path, and it also contributes.
It looks like
to
they're flying through the sun.
Yeah, they're somehow. I don't think they really explain it, but it's like it's really hot or bright or something like that. So they have to use their visors, and then at some point they can't see. So literally, it's kind of goofy, but it's kind of cool again, too. It's like they're taking directions from Battlestar as they fly blind to shoot the mines. Yeah. And it's kind of intense. Like the way they cut this, I think it's cool. It's like, She's like, okay, turn 3 degrees, you know, well, I don't know what she says, but
sci-fi jargon.
And it cuts to like the little joystick that they're using in the ship, and they're shooting, and the way it's edited is pretty cool. And yeah, so that's a whole thing.
The cockpit is melting around them.
Oh yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, Starbuck like looks up and he sees like this, like his ship is melting basically. It's like, and he's the one who's complaining. It's too hot.
Yeah. Well, I will. To be fair to Starbuck, his dick was melted off earlier in the steam burn scene, so he's going through some stuff at this moment.
That's true.
I'm
assuming his dick is melted
his penis
off.
Was burnt off.
Oh God! If Starbuck is the character where if his penis was burned off, he'd just jump out of the ship.
Yeah, he'd airlock himself.
Yeah, he'd eject in the nebulous pathway that they're taking. At this better.
But they make it through. They find a planet that should be like a former mining planet. They're like, ooh, we can mine some, like, you know, or we can get some fuel here, essentially, maybe some food. They go down and they find out it's like freaking the casino planet from Last Jedi. I was not expecting a casino planet in the pilot. Like, the casino planet seems like an idea that you'd see later on in the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
But they get it here, and it's kind of cool. Like, they go down, and there's kind of a fun moment where, of course, the stupid kid comes along with them. Young Atreyu comes with them, and we didn't mention at this point. So we did mention that the kid's dog died earlier. The kid's dog got blown up. So in a way and the kid's basically like catatonic almost, like, my dog died, the human race was killed, you know, like, like, why bother living? You know, he doesn't say that, but that's basically what's happening. So
too small to be a pilot.
Yeah. So basically Jane Seymour, who's his mother, is just like, Apollo, Lieutenant Apollo, could you like, you know, say something to my son, whatever, he looks up to you. So he comes in and Apollo, I guess, talks with the ship doctor or something, and they end up making a robot dog for the kid, and it's called Muffet 2. And it's like, it's literally a guy in like a dog suit with like, you know, little rotating dog ears like on the top of the head. And it was googly eyes.
Yeah, this is very much reminiscent of, like, actually, I guess it came before, but in Thundercats, there's these things called burbles. And it reminded me of a cross between a burble or robo burble and Ewok. Like,
it did look very Ewok-ish, yes.
Yeah, the fur of like it reminded me of like an Ewok, and just its kind of mannerisms, like the kind of like bounciness to it, reminded me of Ewok.
Yeah.
That's not Muffet. He's not even a real Daggett.
No, but he can learn to be like a real one. He's very smart. And if you would help us, it'll be even smarter.
Stop that.
So they land on the planet looking to mine some stuff. And of course, they bring the kid along with them to make him feel, you know, better or whatnot. Like, yeah, you can come on the mission with us, kid. And of course, as soon as they open up like the cockpit to like the Hummer or whatever vehicle they're in, the stupid kid and the dog run off. They get lost, as is want to happen in these type of shows. And he immediately gets like captured by these like bug looking people, like,
like, yeah,
which look pretty cool. I think the aliens in this look pretty cool. They kind of look like in Star Wars, if you like the Zuckus guy, if you can, they look like Zuckus with Forlom's head on top. I know this is getting real like deep cut Star Wars, unless you're a Star Wars nerd, you're not gonna know, but Google Forlom and Zuckus and then compare it to a picture of these aliens. They look kind of similar.
Yeah, so I mean, I already threw out Burbles, which is a obscure reference from Thundercats. So we're just going.
All right.
Yeah, so after you Google those
one for one.
Google Burbles too, so you can know what I'm talking about because it looks just like them.
Basically, for the layman, bug aliens. They look like bug aliens. They invite them in and like, oh, wait a minute, they're actually cool. They got this casino planet where you can't lose, and you're getting like instant qubits, like, you know, or infinite qubits. You can't lose. This is great.
Wait, I hold up. I mean, actually, I just thought of it's kind of remarkable, like, that you kind of have this, the way they encounter the bug people and the way they're automatically like, oh, I guess they're cool. Like, it's they're not like they are suspicious, but not of the race, I guess. Like, the I'm just saying, like, they're not racist. Like, they're just like, oh, you guys
That's
have
a good point. Like, yeah, isn't it? You'd think, you'd think like Starbuck would be like, oh my God, they're disgusting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. But like, these two, they're too gross to run this casino.
Like, how do they not emit ooze when they walk?
Yeah, it's I think it's a little step, I think, and they do this too with the the singers with the four eyes.
Yes,
I like
and
the way
two lips, like the two mouths.
Yeah, the double lips. There's this dancer or trio, I think, of dancers and singers, and they're like they reminded me of the Three Boops from Total Recall.
Very reminiscent of that.
And they're dancing and performing, and this is the crew that Starbuck wants to hire, I guess, even though humanity is extinct.
Well, to hire for what purpose, does he say?
To perform. So he wants to like, he wants to be their agent or something.
Or like, hey, do you guys do like a private shows, like private dances?
Maybe if this was the 80s,
he
would
was probably
that.
Like, so you have two sets of eyes and two sets of mouths, or two mouths. Like, do you have two sets of, you know?
Yeah, that was off camera, Dave. We didn't see that. I'm glad you filled that in for us.
Are you
Starbuck
aren't
so unalike. That's why you hate him so much. You're actually just like him.
Yeah, I'm a self-hater. But, so they're on this casino planet, and, Commander Odama is, like, the only one that's like, well, this is kind of suspicious. Like, yeah, we're getting some supplies that they're bringing up to us, but a very minimal amount. Like, you know what I mean? So it's like, we're not sure what's going on here. And, of course, Raymond Lond, like, the hedonism, like, member of the council or whatever, the hedonistic guy. Because we didn't mention this, like, when the food shortage is going on, they go to Ray Milan's ship, and he's there, like, with just, like, this, like, you know, harem, basically. He's got all these ladies with him. He's like, come, sit down. You know? It's like, we got food, we have wine. Oh, it's amazing. And they eventually, like, take all this stuff, like, all right, buddy. And Ray Milan is kind of set up as, like, okay, this is going to be, like, he's going to, like, sell out. Commander Odama and the humans. Like, it's clear that this guy is a piece of shit, and he's gonna be like kind of the antagonist for that's with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I looked it up. His name is Sire Uri.
Sire Uri.
So yeah, and he becomes like Adama's new nemesis. So by the time he gets to the casino planet, then he's like, oh, you know, let's just stay here, you know, let's be peace. But it's not really clear. I guess it's because of revealed that this planet is run by the Cylons as well.
The bug people are in cahoots with the Cylons.
Right. And so it's not clear if Sire Uri was actually influenced or this was his own idea, but he starts positing the idea that they should destroy their warships.
Sign of peace. Like, look, we're not going to bug you. We're just going to, like, you know, stay on this casino planet with our endless winnings and with the three boob chicks. You know, we're just going to chill here.
Everybody wants to chill here. And it kind of, I mean, it makes sense, I guess. But at the same time, Adama is, you know, fool me once, shame on me, me twice. Exactly.
It's also, we should note that it's... It's so funny. Like, we're going to stay here. It's great. We only really see one room of this casino planet.
That's true. Yeah. Well, we see one room where all the gambling's happening. And I guess there is an elevator, but we never see anything else. Apparently, they all
have rooms.
I guess
the suggestion is that maybe there are rooms that they stay in, but we never see them. And you would think, like, if that's the case, like, if I'm the humans, I would think, like, why do they have all these empty rooms? Oh, no. You know what it is? I think they say... Boomer says, when Boomer and Apollo or Boomer and Starbuck are walking through the place, they say that there are many casino-like areas like this throughout the galaxy. They're basically kind of like speakeasies or something.
Yeah, because they make a joke that, Starbuck has this phrase. He's like, if there's a game going on, I'd know about it.
Yeah, like this is like the idea is they think this is some kind of secret, like speakeasy type place that similar places like this exist. So that's why they don't necessarily question it as much as they should.
Well, the only thing that still like is weird to me, I guess, because of where it is. But I guess if you think about it theoretically and logistically, like they could still get there throughout that dangerous passageway. It would just take them forever. So it's not like this is an...
They just took the most dangerous route to get there.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. So it is true that this could be like... Because I was thinking, like, why aren't they asking how these people got here? But I guess they could... Like, they could have just gone the long way, basically, to get there.
Adama's, like, the only one that questions anything.
Yeah, Adama's... And then, so there's a really cool scene. I think we both liked it, where Adama is, like, realizing that he's not... He's, like, under surveillance. And so he goes into the dock and like hides in one of the Vipers and gets his right hand man Ty, and he's like, get in the other ship, and they go on like this closed comm system, and they're like exchanging secret messages. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of 2001, kind of.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, for sure.
It was cool. And he comes up with this plan, like, all right, look, I'm just gonna say Ray Milland, because that's the name I can remember. Ray Milland, like, he's watching us, like, he's got this plan to destroy all the ships in the name of peace, whatever. I think we're getting conned here. I think the Cylons might be around. So he's like, because Ray Milland is like this douchey guy that doesn't know a starfighter from like a politician or whatever, like, get everyone you can, get all the like fighter pilot outfits you can, and put them on regular Joes, so that Ray Milland thinks, because he wants all the starfighters to be like on the planet with them for this ceremony. They're gonna celebrate like the three pilots that got us here, you know, through like the sun thing or whatever that was.
Well, it's gonna be the same trick. It's gonna be the same trick as that the Cylons did before, is like get all the military, all the people together in one spot. Yeah.
I'm not falling for it again. So get everyone in these outfits so that Ray Milland thinks all the fighters are down there, but then we'll be ready if the Cylons do come. Like, they want to be ready, basically, if the Cylons ambush them.
Yeah, and so, and Adama's like, okay, we're going to trick them. So they give all these, like, pedestrians, I guess, military uniforms, so that way that...
Should we even give the socialaters a costume? Yes, even the socialaters. Okay, sir.
No people too.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Continue.
Well, they trick Sire Yuri by, and it's kind of funny actually. Sire Yuri, he has this line like, "Oh, I see all your people are here." And so all these people are walking around in military outfits, and then Boomer and Starbuck are there. Apollo's not, and they start realizing that people are in uniforms that aren't part of their squad. And so they get suspicious.
Not only that, like, these suits are like three sizes too big for a lot of these people. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, it's clear the outfits don't fit either. So it's a very but to Sire Yuri, he wouldn't probably catch any of that.
Because he's basically like the hedonism bot from Futurama. He's all he cares about is just, you know, like having his drink and eating like, you know, chicken legs like that. Well, I guess we don't see that, but I'm just extrapolating.
You know, he's got social leaders feeding him grapes.
Oh, for sure. Yes. That's his whole vibe.
Yeah,
but sure enough, the Cylons are there. Oh, and one thing we forgot to mention, the bug people, as like people are having a good time in the casino lobby or whatever, this one room that we see, people occasionally go to the, you know what? It is suggested that there are rooms, because at one point, like the whole Starbuck, Athena, socialator love triangle comes to a head when they're at the casino, and someone says like, hey, I got the key to the royal suite. You know what I mean? So there are like hotel room areas in this area, this world.
Yeah, there are hotel rooms, but there's also rooms and floors that they they're not even supposed to go to, right?
Yeah, there's like a bottom floor. Like, it seems like people, like floors 1 through 3 are available to everybody, but below that they can't. So there's some scenes interspersed in the casino scenes when they go into the elevator, presumably to get laid, and they they click their floor, but then they keep going down. Like, what's happening? The door opens and you get that sort of like, you know, typical thing you see in sci-fi things where they don't show you what it is. They just show the lady there and she screams.
Push level 3 for us, please. I feel like a total glut, Francois. Nothing fits me anymore. And we've only been down on the surface for 3. I asked you to push the 3rd level. There, you've missed our lodging.
I did press it. Something seems to be wrong.
Well, there are no lodgings this far down. Look there. Seems to be taking us all the way to the bottom.
Something seems to be happening.
Let me have that control. There. We've stopped. Thank goodness. I wonder what's down here.
And we discovered that the bug people are putting them in like in these little pods in the wall. It kind of looks like a beehive. And they're basically like sucking their life force or something.
Yeah, they're harvesting humans.
They're harvesting humans. And it's like, it's not graphic, but I think they do a good job like with the suggestion and the lighting especially. It looks like they're putting them like in a beehive or something. And yeah. It's kind of creepy.
There is an effectiveness to this, I think. Especially yeah. with the very first introduction to this floor. We don't see anything. We just have the woman screaming, and it's very like 70s sci-fi movie-esque. I feel like in that way, and it's pretty cool. I got a kick out of it. And then yeah, they show the beehive thing with them, you know, draining the humans, and you've even got one cell with like a little alien in there, I guess, like sucking his life or whatever. So yeah, it looks great. It's very cool and creepy.
And then Starbuck and Apollo find out, and they basically that's it. That's kind of this leads us to the climax of the TV pilot.
Well, like the discovery coincides, I think, with the attack. Everything kind of happens at the same time. So then everybody's on alert, and they're trying to escape. You know, there's a pretty cool. I liked it a lot. Where there's some kind of underground bridge. And they're being chased by Cylons, and they're shooting back and forth. I love that. Like, I think it's got a matte painting in the back.
Lot of matte paintings in these scenes, and it did, again, a similar vibe to Star Wars, but like, you know, it's not a copy. George, calm down. Again, I think they're just duplicating the feel of Star Wars, not like the events and things that happen. You know.
Star Wars used hallways and Battlestar uses bridges. They're totally different.
Yeah, it's not like there's a scene where like, you know, they shoot like a grappling hook on a thing and then they like glide across like a chasm or something. That doesn't happen I guess I can't speak to the remaining episodes of season 1 and 2. Maybe that does happen at some point. But at least in here, this TV pilot, like that does not happen. Like again, it's just the feel of Star Wars. It's George, just calm down, okay? Just put your calm down, like silence your lawyers, just take it easy.
You can't
go on like this. Like, you got Empire to think about. You're working on Empire Strikes Back right now. You know, you got to work on the follow up to Star Wars. You got a lot on your mind. Just leave Battlestar alone. Let it do its thing.
Let Star Wars speak for itself.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, so it leads to this battle, and we find out, because this is like a mining planet, like Starbuck and his friends start just shooting shit below. They start shooting shit in the basement, and it lights up, I guess, this gas or whatever it is, and they got to get out of there because the planet's going to blow up.
Well, that's the whole strategy behind the Adama's technique, is that he's like, oh, this planet can blow up if we shoot it with lasers. So if I remember correctly, that's like either it's Apollo or Adama, but he's like,
it's Apollo because they have to shoot him like underneath, like where the mines are, basically.
But they trick the Cylons into shooting too, so they can blow up the planet.
I like, kind of took it as like a cumulative effect. Like they started the shit, like they kind of started the powder keg, like underneath. You know what I mean? And then when the Cylons come, they kind of light the fuse, is how I took it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But they do know that the planet is basically combustible.
Yes.
Which seems pretty dangerous. Maybe you shouldn't go to that planet.
And this kind of, you know, this is, I mean, I guess I get it. They're on the run. The bug people, like, pulled a fast one on them, and they're, like, sucking their life force. But there is that thing. Like if this were Star Trek, I would think Captain Picard would be like, well, yes, yeah, we want to get away, and it's bad what they were doing, but we don't necessarily want to genocide an entire planet. You know what I mean? Like, I had that thought, like, the entire planet blows up, and, like, yes, they were bug people, but they were also people.
Yeah.
Similar to Time, we don't know exactly how many people were down there, how many bug people are down there. Was it just this, like, casino resort, and that was it on the entire planet? Like,
yeah, I mean, they definitely don't clarify it, so it's totally open and nebulous. But I guess the logic might be because the insect aliens are in cahoots with the Cylons, so they're enemies now.
Yeah, but still, it's like, that's a big move to blow up an entire planet.
Yeah, a whole, and they do show the planet explode.
Yes. And there's no sense of, like, you know, I mean, again, I know they were being chased by these people, but it's like, what if there was, like, a thing like, oh, you know, sir, I don't know if I should mention this, but we did a scan of the other side of the planet. There was actually a whole other civilization over there that was living on the surface that seemed pretty cool and nice. Well, all right, just have to write them off. One for the history books, I guess.
I just looked in our database, and on the other side of the planet, they are days away from the cure for cancer.
Yes. It was actually a utopian society on the other side of the planet that we didn't check out.
There's the society. We've actually been building our society off of it.
Maybe we should have had Apollo and Starbuck reconnoiter more than 10 miles worth of space. You know what I mean?
You weren't too busy chasing Moffat, too. You could have.
Yes.
That's the thing about Boxy and Atreyu and Moffat, is they're always running away. Like,
always.
That's all they're doing, is just they're just running.
There's two modes that Atreyu has in this. I'm just going to keep calling him Atreyu, the kid. There's two modes that he has: catatonic and constantly running away, which are really two opposite extremes.
I was genuinely pissed off at everybody when there's a scene where they're doing reconnaissance, and Apollo's driving, and they've got what's her name? The Boxy's
Jane
mom?
Seymour, the mom.
Jane Seymour.
Solitaire from Live and Let Die.
They're all in the car, and then they just park, and they're on this strange planet. They've never been here. And Boxy and just runs. Boxy and Moffat just run, and Apollo's just like, oh, can you go get him? And I'm like,
there's like no concern. Like, go get him, will you?
I mean, it's just like, you guys, no one is responsible here, and Boxy is just running, and nobody is acting the way they
concerned.
Should be acting.
Yeah. There's like not even low level concern. It's like, go get him. I mean,
I mean, don't you even, there's insect aliens walking around.
Yes. The dynamic between Jane Seymour, Apollo, and the kid is kind of funny, because at one point the kid asks his mom when Apollo leaves the room, can he be my new dad?
Oh my God. They go, you know, it is so weird. Like, the way they're building this relationship.
Yeah.
They are building it like they're centering it more around Boxy than they are around the man and the woman. Like,
I guess we're just married now, huh? Okay.
It's like, so do you want to be a dad?
Yeah, it's like, whoa, this is going pretty fast here. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, it's like, the mom is like taking.
Listen, I just gave your kid a robot dog. I wasn't saying I was going to marry you or anything.
Oh, man. Yeah, that whole scene, I'm like, just get Boxy under control. But yeah, he's always running around, but I do think that, you know, when the planet explodes, we start to, you know, see that the journey is going to be more perilous, and we're probably just going to keep seeing more of this like failure and like how is this
well, especially when they have so many stupid people like in their squadron or whatever.
Yeah, it's funny if we learn like the Galactica is actually like the lowest, the least talented of all the battle
the lowest
stars.
Rated one.
Like, yeah, of the 12, they were ranked 12.
But one thing we haven't mentioned, and I like what you mentioned, yeah, like as this, as it ends, as they blow up this entire planet and they're leaving, like it's a good sense of like dread, but also like, you know what, we're just going to keep going. We're going to find Earth, like this mystical place, the 13th colony where we may have all come from, and maybe there's still humans there or whatever. And to cut back to the Cylons, one thing we haven't mentioned, the Cylons appear to be like controlled or run. Their leader is like this, what may be the last remaining like reptilian Cylon.
Yeah. Because
they mentioned the Cylons were created by reptilian creatures like 1,000 years ago or something, and now they're no more reptilians. But clearly, we see him shrouded in darkness at all times, but he's like an emperor-type character, and it's clear that he's not full-on robot.
He's something else. Yeah. But they do a cool job. Like, if he's in the on the screen, he's very far away. You can't really make out his face or anything.
You never get a close-up on him.
Right, exactly. But we see him talking to the Cylons, to Baltar, and giving directions. And I do like it's you know, he's on like this throne that is like really elevated, looking down on everybody. So like the shots are like always angled kind of thing.
Yeah, and we find out that this guy actually dies and is replaced by what looks like an identical looking guy.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, he was replaced by his predecessor.
You are Baltar?
As if you don't remember, hmm?
My predecessor has left me with a difficult choice.
Your predecessor
was destroyed by your peers. A foolish miscalculation of the will of your people.
Yeah, so it's unclear, but I like the mystery. He's like, all right, Baltar, like, we will spare your life. You know what I mean? Like, it's clear that you know some things about the humans. Maybe you could, maybe we could get you in there and infiltrate them or something. You know, we could keep using you. But we also, it ends on a cool cliffhanger moment where the emperor-looking guy is like, bring in Lucifer.
Yes.
It's actually, this thing comes in like another, it looks like a Cylon bug hybrid looking thing. It looks weird.
So Lucifer, he sticks around, thankfully, but I love Lucifer. But yeah, he's just this robot. He's got this black, like pyramid looking small face. And then the top of his head is like a cone, but it's all like a circuitry, and it's like blinking purple lights and stuff like that.
He has a great entrance. The door is open and he just comes in like with the dark in darkness and just chunk, 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 you know. He has a cool entrance, and it's like it gets you pumped for the rest of the show. Like, oh shit, like we got a new baddie.
And his name is Lucifer.
Name is literally Lucifer. Which is just like, okay, they're going there. All right.
Three great Lucifers in all of human history. We've got the original Lucifer. We've got Lucifer the cat from Cinderella. And we've got Lucifer from Battlestar Galactica.
But you know what? It got me pumped for more episodes. And I'll be honest with you, Nick. So I wasn't 100% sold on doing this as a whole series. I was honestly thinking like, all right, if this pilot kind of sucks, we could always just like cut off there. This could be a one-time deal. But this got me pumped, man. Like, I gotta say, with the exception of Starbuck and the almost no sense of time in the show. Like, we don't have any idea how much time passes. I really enjoyed this TV pilot. Like, I went in thinking this was going to be, like, super cheesy, and maybe I can enjoy it on that level. And to be fair, like, it often gets cheesy, but I think it does a good job of balancing all these factors, the cheesiness, the grim realities of the story that they're in. Some of the other characters are, like, I like Adama. Adama's cool. Apollo seems okay. And the ship design and just the general vibe and fun of it, like, it won me over, and I'm excited for more.
Cool. Yeah. I had a, like, I mean, this movie slash series is obviously not, I don't think it's perfect, but it has a charm to it that, yeah. I mean, if you like Star Wars and Star Trek, which I know you do like both, I'm like, this is another, like, little gem that walks the line between those two and really can appeal to, if you have interest in either of those, I think there's enough here that really, you know, appeals to people and, like, is a little interesting and just fun and cute.
Yeah. Like, going in, my thought was, like, I think my only real exposure to Battlestar Galactica, the original series, like, in my mind, when I thought of it, I just thought of, like, people in, like, you know, white gowns and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, white robes. Like, for some reason, like, they all dress.
I thought
in
it
robes.
Was just a bunch of council members. The whole
well,
show.
Like, that's, like, the imagery that I saw the most from the show. I saw that, and I saw, like, the spaceships, and in my mind, I conjured this like image of, like, oh, it's gonna be like a dumb kind of, like, a lot of people sitting in council rooms and stuff like that. And those scenes are here, but, like, they are not the majority at all. They're the minority. We get some of those scenes, but it's the majority of this is just fun spacefaring adventure, I would say.
I definitely agree with you. I think there's a lot of charm here for me, especially. So I'm glad you liked it. I thought that it'll be good too, because you've seen the remake. So you have some context, and we both are, and I've seen this before, so I'm seeing if it still holds up, and you're seeing if you like it at all. And I think there's some, it'll be fun to keep going on this adventure, because I think there's the characters are likable, like, besides Starbuck, but I think that, like, I really like Commander Adama. I think he's a cool character.
Yeah, I agree.
I like he's a great actor.
Yeah.
I think he has, like, a kind of this
gravitas.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. 100%. So I'm excited to keep going, because I do get a kick out of the show, at least so far again.
Well, yeah. So when we come back, and this will be an ongoing series, we have so many separate ongoing series going on, like, in conjunction with the main show. It makes me laugh. But when the AVP BSG OG series continues.
I'm impressed you did that without any errors.
We will return with episode 2, Lost Planet of the Gods, part 1. See you next time, Starfighters.
Goodbye.
Baltar?